Hello and welcome back to the Most Dangerous Podcast. How are you, Fraser?
I'm okay, yeah, not too bad. James, how's yourself?
Do you know what? I'm so tired this week. So apologies, like if this is a bit kind of a... This is going to be a moan, actually. I've just been so tired this week. From Monday, I was falling asleep in work on Monday. And that's just always a bad sign, isn't it? I've had a really crap week. Everything's gone wrong. I'm dead tired and I've had enough. And that's it.
Right. Ask being the most dangerous podcast. Thanks very much.
But one thing I was thinking about this week, actually, and I don't know if you can help me. It might sound like a really silly question.
Go on.
But you know, like in your fridge, you've got a dial.
Yeah.
It goes from like 1 to 5.
Yeah. If you turn it down too much, your salad freezes.
Well, I was going to say, does that make it go warmer or colder?
I don't know. Do you mean is 5 colder or warmer?
Yeah, because it doesn't really say, does it?
No.
Like, what does... I'm just confused.
Here's one I've always wondered. If a fridge is set to 2 degrees and you take it outside in the winter when it's minus 10, is it warm in the fridge?
Yeah, you could get in it, couldn't you?
Yeah, for a warm.
So in the winter, sometimes I think that I open the fridge and I think it's warmer in there than it is outside.
Yeah, I remember someone we knew as a kid, that his dad was extremely tight with money. During the winter, they actually just had a box outside that they kept the fridge and freezer stuff in.
Oh, really? That's a good idea.
Switch the fridge and freezer off. Yeah.
I saw this. Did you ever see, what was it called? Like, cheapskates or something, extreme cheapskates.
Yes.
What was the channel called now? It's just some trash channel.
I know.
I saw one with a guy and he had a timer on top of his fridge. And when the kids like went in to get the milk or something, it had like a countdown for like,
oh, really?
10 seconds. After they got down to 10 seconds, he was like, right, shut the door. You've had enough time now.
I saw one where they had a family light bulb. And if you wanted to go to the toilet, you had to take the light bulb out and take it to the toilet and put it in. They all had to sit in the dark. And this woman, she made her husband, as soon as the adverts came on, I had to switch the telly off. And wait,
oh, really?
Wait. For 3 minutes and put them back in. Yeah, mental. I you know, I'm all for not wasting money, but, you know, there's no point in being a twat about it either.
Yeah, so. I mean, you've got to accept some additional expense, particularly with children around.
Do you know... You've mentioned a couple of times, mentioned about us getting old and stuff and being miserable. And I was just thinking, you know how like tired and sore and stuff is one of the symptoms. Have you noticed that you get really angry at like stuff that wouldn't have bothered you before?
Yeah, like Virgin Media.
Yes.
They piss me right off all the time. Like, I just need to think of them and I get pissed off about them.
Aye, but even simple things. I went to my little lockup. And it'd gone dark.
What's your lock up?
A lock up.
What you keep in there?
Screaming souls. Just my shutters. It's a container, container.
Nothing sinister.
Nothing sinister. No. It's just one naked guy strapped to a chair. And I was driving. It was late at night, and there's an office that's got a light on because there's a wee security guy waits until midnight and then locks the big main gate so he can't get in.
Right.
And I was driving past a big tropical fish tank, and it was only 2/3 full of water, and I got really angry about it.
Just say that again. Sorry, you were doing what with the tropical fish? You had the tropical fish tank.
No, I was driving into my lockup.
Yeah.
And as you drive in, you pass like a little office building.
Oh, and it's got one in there. Ah,
tropical fish tank in there. Only 2/3 full of water. And you know, I actually moaned about it so much when I got home to Laura. She told me to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I don't blame her.
Never mind the guy's fish. And I was like, why would you have a massive fish tank and only put 2/3 of the water in? That's like, the guy that owns a fish tank, I'd like to give him a 6-bedroom house and lock half the doors.
Well, maybe he's on a water meter and he's trying to save money.
Maybe.
Extreme cheapskate. Yeah. Well, you know, doesn't want to feel it all the way.
All these fish, like, just swimming about at the bottom. Going, there's fucking loads of room up there. But I like, well, that's what I'm saying, though. These stupid things, I started to get really angry about it. I wanted to go knock on his door and say, look, can I bring some water and fill up the fish tank?
A couple of buckets. Yeah, mate.
Yeah. So we'll cut that bit out anyway.
Right. Yeah, all very exciting stuff. So we've done the pleasantries and stuff. Do you want to do the social stuff? That's what we usually do at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, follow us on social platforms. No, do you want me to do it all?
You can do it now. Do you want to do it later?
No, we'll do it now. The usual, we're a lot worse at this than other people. I think we just do this for our own fun sometimes. But we do want you to follow us. We're on Facebook, The Most Dangerous Podcast. TikTok, The Most Dangerous Podcast. All the usual places. YouTube, The Most Dangerous Podcast. Spotify. But what we need you to do is follow us. If you're on Spotify, a wonderful thing to do is to set to auto download our episodes.
Oh, that's a thing, isn't it? Yeah. Do that and do the review thing where we can give us 5 stars. Give us 5 stars, and if you don't want to give us 5 stars, just don't bother reviewing it.
That's it. Yeah, give us 5 stars or not at all. Yeah.
All or nothing. That's what they say.
Absolutely.
And the email address as well. Just one last thing.
JamesandFraserPod@gmail.com. And we no longer need to lie, James. We've actually been getting emails recently. We've got
no way, yay!
No, seriously, if you're out there, just like, share, tell your friends.
Yeah, drop us a message. Tell us you love us. Tell us you hate us. Whatever. All right, okay, that's enough of that. Thank you very much. So it's my tale today. So because of that reason, Fraser, it's your week to do the news. So should we crack on with that?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, dangerous news. Does that just before? Is that annoying or is that all right?
I think it's all right. I like it. I look forward to it.
Okay, all right. We'll carry on then.
So I've got a few stories for you actually here. I've got more than usual, but they're quite short. So
okay, good.
So we'll start. There was a bizarre incident in a gym in Monterrey, Mexico. A gym, you know, weight machines and stuff like that, where two ladies actually, they were squabbling over a machine that they both wanted to use. And it resulted in an altercation where one lady bit off another lady's finger.
Wow. Yeah. That is extreme.
It is.
How? I'm just trying to picture the scene. So there was that kind of scrapping, and then she just grabbed her hand and went rah, something like that.
Yeah, so basically one lady called Rosanna accused a lady called Leticia of monopolizing a leg press machine. I think she just thought she'd been on it too long.
Monopolizing.
So they had a little bit of a scrap, and one lady bit off the other lady's finger.
God. And fully off.
Fully off, yeah, oh yeah.
That's some, that's, I'm almost proud of her there. That's pretty hard going, that, isn't it, to bite someone's finger off?
It is. Now, when I first read this story, it had obviously been translated from Spanish to English, and it said that, Leticia amputated Rosanna's finger with her mouth.
well, you know, it's true.
Essentially, that's what it is. So the gym had none of it, and they revoked both of their memberships. And Leticia, who was the lady that bit Rosanna's finger off, she's obviously facing assault charges. But
yeah, I was going to say, there's a bit of trouble there.
So that's one wee short story. I quite enjoyed reading that.
Yeah, did she manage to get the finger back on, do you know? Did it say?
I've no idea.
Did you stitch it back on?
Yeah.
Put it in a bag of peas and take it to the hospital.
Aye, no doubt. Okay, so James, in our second story, in a hilarious turn of events on the island of Guernsey, a group of cows decide to take matters into their own hoofs after escaping from their pasture. Instead of causing chaos, they calmly strolled to the nearest animal rescue facility and turned themselves in.
Oh, no. Similar to the horse one last week, I suppose, just although they didn't go to the station, they went to...
Aye.
Do you think it was a cry for help going to the sort of animal sanctuary?
Maybe. Maybe the farmer hadn't given them enough to eat grass.
Hay and stuff. Yeah.
Hay, yeah. Grass. So they turned themselves in.
I love cows, mate. I think they're mint.
They're ace.
Like, they kind of like just made me laugh looking at them because they're just so weird.
They've got a dead square arse, haven't they? So if someone's like, so if they're meant to have an arse, but someone's chopped it off.
Yeah, I just, like, you know, you pass and see you in the field, it just makes me smile. I don't know, weird.
Justin Allen, a 33-year-old father from Pennsylvania, had an unforgettable experience during his vasectomy when an earthquake struck.
Oh, I think I did see this, actually. Or maybe you sent it to me. Yeah.
Possibly sent it to you. So basically, midway through the delicate procedure, the room began to shake. Initially, it left him bewildered, but his surgeon said to him, it was an earthquake. And he thought it was a joke, and when everything calmed down, they carried on with the procedure. But obviously later he found out that there had genuinely been an earthquake.
And he had no dick.
Yeah. So, yeah, so imagine that you're lying, someone with a scalpel in your ball sack, and there's an earthquake. I mean, that's one of the last things that you would want, isn't it, really?
Definitely. I mean, I thought they don't put you to sleep then, no?
I have had this procedure myself.
Like 12 months ago. Can we broadcast this?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay, so did they put you to sleep?
No, they give you cream and then an injection.
Really? So, yeah, but then they put one of those things up, like a cloth, so you can't see what's going on.
Not really, no.
Fucking hell, did they get the clamps out?
I had an Indian doctor that the lady was a lovely lady, but she wasn't dressed as a doctor. She was just in her own clothes.
Where did you get this done?
Basically, the NHS haven't got time to do it, so they refer you to a private place, but they pay for it.
Just down this alley, mate.
Yeah. But they cauterize it, right? So when they cut you, they then cauterize it with like a soldering iron.
What does that mean?
You don't feel anything, but you can smell your own flesh burning.
Oh, what, to put it back together? Yeah, they sort of stick them together, do they?
They actually remove the tubes altogether and cauterize both ends. And then she said to me at the end, she goes, do you want to see the tubes? And I said, no. Yeah, she said, apparently guys get their picture taken with them.
With the tubes? Can you take them out and fry them up?
Yeah. I was like, no, I'm fine, thanks.
Oh, mate.
But, okay, story number four. We'll keep these short. They're just interesting little stories. A woman who was addicted to eating her own hair had to have a 15-centimeter hairball with a tail removed from her stomach.
Oof. There's a lesson there somewhere.
I think there's definitely a lesson, yeah. So this lady, she was suffering from nausea and dramatic weight loss, couldn't understand what was wrong with her, and after having a scan and x-ray and whatnot, they found this giant hairball in her bowel.
Oh, God. So my daughter used to do this, actually, when she was very, very, very little.
Yeah.
I don't know. It must be some sort of... Because in this story, I don't know, like, was she cutting it off and then just sort of eating it as a snack? But
I think she was just chewing it. She had long hair, yeah.
So we had a bit of a concern with my daughter when she was very, like, you know, she was really young, like 3 or something. Mm-hmm. And she just grabbed the side of her hair and just literally pull it and then she'd eat it. And for ages, well, not for ages, like 6 months or something, like she had a lopsided haircut.
Oh, really?
One of the side of her. But then it was kind of like, well, this is a bit scary because has she got anxiety or have we done something? Like, have we messed her up? Is she broken? But she kind of grew out of it. So
yeah, it's a really weird thing, but I believe it's not uncommon. So last story was one that you sent me, and I thought, I don't want to upset you by leaving it out, and I thought it was a fantastic story.
That's a good one.
So in a bizarre, morbid attempt at financial gain, a Brazilian woman brought her seemingly dead uncle to a bank to secure a loan. And he was dead.
Did you manage to find the video?
I haven't, no. No, I didn't.
It's pretty disturbing.
Really? So there's actually a video out. We'll try and find it and put it on Facebook. Mm. So the bank clerks actually noticed this woman bringing someone with them that had a very lethargic appearance. And the lady, Erica de Souza Vieira, tried to coax her deceased relative into signing off a loan.
she didn't, though, did she? Because he's dead. She can't count the dead person. But it's like, go on.
She must have had his hand in her hand.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, it's first of all, it's like Weekend at Bernie's. Have you ever seen that? Yeah. You know, when they go, I saw it was like years ago, and it was like two guys went, and this guy dies, doesn't he? And then they, all weekend, they're just kind of, they've got his arms on sort of fishing wire and stuff. And then the second thing that I thought of is Alan Partridge.
Yes, for his new contract.
That's right. So he goes to the BBC and the guy dies while he's having his interview. And he sort of gets it. I'll just sign this for you. This, you know. that probably is not a very good reference for our listeners overseas. But if you manage to dig out Alan Partridge, it's very funny.
It is, actually. Yeah, it's a good show. Good show. So that's the dangerous news. I kept them short. They're just interesting little snippets of news there.
Short and sweet. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, yeah. All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to look those up.
No problem. Yeah.
Did you see the story about the hedgehog?
The hedgehog? No.
Okay. I'll save that for next week then.
Right. Okay.
All right. All right. That's this week's Dangerous News. Thank you, Fraser.
Okay. So that was the Dangerous News. I hope you enjoyed that. A couple of wee interesting stories there.
Excellent.
But now we've got your big main event.
That's it, yes. It's my week this week, so I've been slaving away all week, despite being incredibly tired, despite having a really crap week in work. I've got a tale for you, Fraser, this week. Okay. It's a little bit sad. Oh. It's, I don't know, might be a little bit liberating, maybe, even though there's some sad bits in it.
Right.
So, are you sitting comfortably?
No, actually, I need to sort out where I do this podcast because I'm never comfortable.
All right, well, get comfortable. Sit back, relax.
I'll lean back.
And I'll get started. On the 20th of April 1902, Marie and Pierre Curie successfully isolated a brand new element, radium. It was thought at the time that this material had just loads and loads of fantastic and wonderful qualities. And while radium became hugely popular, the true nature of radiation wasn't realised for some time. So, for example, it was understood that radium could be used to attack cancerous cells, but whilst that was happening, no one was actually really looking at the effect it was having on normal cells. And on top of this, radium glows. So this is quite unusual at the time. So people were sort of looking at it going, wow, this is incredible. Look, it's got some sort of magical power. Because of the popularity of it, some doctors encouraged the use of radium through various tonics and lotions, and soon enough it was included in everything. So you'd get things like radium chocolates, radium drinks, makeup, skincare products, toothpaste, plasters would have radium in them, cough syrup, things like that. You'd even get like radium spas. So you'd go to like a bath and they'd infuse radium into water, and you could go and sit in this radium infused water, and then you get out and you'd literally be glowing.
Bloody hell, feel fantastic, but you're bald.
Yeah, like, you know. So World War I broke out, and then it was realised that radium had another quality. As I mentioned, it glows, and it also glows in the dark. So what people started to realise, it could be painted on the dials of clocks or pocket watches or dial instruments, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And this would help soldiers do night missions or what have you. So they didn't have to pull out their torch or lantern at the time, I suppose, and get shot by a sniper. They'd have the glow in the dark watch.
Do you know, Ed, World War One? It always amazes me that there were bits of that were actually like fought on horseback with swords and stuff like that, and
it was kind of like a turning of technology, if you like.
Yes,
it's the mixture of like old war and new war almost.
That's it. Like, I think the war became so big that they had to develop new technology. I think the tanks were invented during World War One, and
yeah, things,
you
know,
a lot of these sorts of things. But yeah, you forget how primitive a lot of stuff was in World War One.
That's it. Yeah. So they just started to develop glow in the dark watches, or the dials would have the glow in the dark. So, like I say, soldiers didn't have to sort of look under the light to see what time it was. So after the First World War. So the demand was huge in the war. And then after 1917, the demand for radium painted dials was through the roof. You know, everybody wanted one. They're brilliant. So this brings us to the story of the Radium Girls. So I know what you're thinking, Fraser. The Radium Girls, it's not some 90s pop group. You know, I know it sounds like it. It's more tragic than that. I don't know. It might be more tragic than the Spice Girls. I'm not sure.
Sounds like that K-pop, you know, the Korean.
Yeah, yeah.
The Radium Girls.
That's it. I mean, it's a pretty cool name, actually, for a band. But yeah. Like a punk band or a 90s girl band. Could be one or the other, couldn't it?
All right, we'll copyright it now.
So our story begins in the 1920s in Orange, New Jersey, and with the United States Radium Corporation. So this company had been active for a number of years, and it had developed a radium-infused paint called Undark. So it does exactly what it says on the tin there, you know, it undarks things. during the war effort, business has been booming, naturally, particularly for the United States Radium Corporation. Mm-hmm. By the 1920s, they had a number of facilities in a number of different states, but it was the one in Orange that was responsible for painting clock faces and dials.
Right.
So the facility employed hundreds of young women. They painted the watch dials with the luminous radium paint. And at first, it seemed like a dream come true. Absolutely wonderful job. It was well paid. You're working in a kind of glamorous industry. You know, you're not working in sort of a weird sort of cotton factory or whatever. It's, you know, you're working in this newfound industry. It's great. It was skilled. It was respected. And on top of it, no one really perceived it to be dangerous at the time.
Would have been like high-tech industry then.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yeah. So it'd be working in what's that? California,
Silicon Valley
type thing. Yeah, yeah. And on top of all this, as well, like the workers viewed working with radium as like a perk. You know, because mm-hmm. everything's got radium in it, and it's like the doctors are saying, yeah, not all doctors, but a lot of them are going, yeah, radium's really good for you. So they're going into work thinking, well, I don't even need to go to the doctors. I'm getting it for free. What are the health benefits of this? It's brilliant.
This was back in the days where they used to prescribe cocaine and heroin and stuff like that. You know, going to remove your tooth, we'll just rub some cocaine on your gums first.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, some of the girls would even paint their nails and their teeth before going out, you know, for a night of dancing or whatever. So it'd be like, oh, Betty, can you do me nails in radium?
Dear God.
And just, yeah. And their fingers would glow in the dark. The workers' clothes would start to glow because of the exposure in the air of the radium. And it wasn't uncommon for some of the girls to turn up in their best dress. So they'd go to work in their best clothes just so that they'd get radium exposure and their clothes would glow.
Surely, I mean, I know that they were probably a lot more naive because this, you know, we didn't have science, wasn't at the same level and stuff, but surely nothing that makes things glow can be safe. Or a good
idea. But like you say, and we say this every week, you've got to put yourself in the context of the time, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, in the 1950s or whatever it was, people were being told to like smoke because it had health benefits.
Yeah.
You know, true. We know that to be daft now, you know, and like you look back at it and go, you're like, surely if you're burning something and inhaling it, that can't be good for you. But back then, everyone was going, yeah, get it down, yeah, it's great. Get the kids smoking, awesome.
Even when we were young, you know, probably when we were really young and just before then, when the, you know, a Mars a day helps you work, rest and play. And
yeah, exactly.
A finger of fudge is just enough to give you what you need. You just know, a bar of sugar.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 You know, and, so it's just the context, isn't it? And like, you know, it's harmless, but it makes things glow. So it looks mint, but it's fine. So the work was pretty straightforward, to be fair. I mean, you can imagine, can't you? It's basically, you've got a pot of paint, you've got a watch face, just paint that. You know? And then when you've finished, do another one. But nevertheless, I mean, it needed to be done with precision, right? And I was like, do you know, like when you were a kid, like, it was a bit random when you were a kid, weren't it? And your mum would be like, do you want to do some painting? And you'd like get the paints out and stuff. And did you ever do that thing where you kind of like lick the brush to make it like a thin point so you get more like precision?
Oh, yeah.
So that's what these girls were doing. So they were dipping it in. So they do a dial and then sort of put it in their mouth. They put the paint brush in their mouths, get a thin tip back in the radium, and then paint again. And they were actually encouraged to do this by the factory, like, because it makes it, it's easier to do, and it makes it, gives it more precision.
Yeah.
So that's where it started, really. Okay, so as the months and the years passed, the factory girls began to fall ill. They started to experience excruciating pain, swelling in the joints, deteriorating teeth and bones. Many were having to visit dentists often. When they were getting there, they were losing teeth. Each visit, you know, they go to see the dentist. The dentist would be like, "Oh, that one's got to come out." And then the next week, they'd have to go back and go, "Yeah, that one's going to come out as well." So they were feeling constantly exhausted, in pain, and in some cases, they found that their jaw bones were actually riddled with holes. You know, like kind of honeycomb, like
rotten away.
Yeah, pretty much. So many of the radium girls developed a rare and horrifying condition known as radium necrosis.
Right.
You've not heard of that before, no?
No.
So this is where the bone, like, disintegrates internally.
Shit.
And it's apparently it's just horrific and just leads to an agonizing death. The bones are, like, eating themselves.
Well, sorry to interrupt, but have you seen, did you watch the recent show just called Chernobyl?
I didn't finish it. It was one of those where I kind of saw about two episodes, and then for whatever reason, I just never got around to finalizing it.
No, there's a bit in that where obviously the ones that have been exposed to the radiation, it's not radium, it's a different kind of radiation, but their body just kind of dissolves, just breaks down.
Yeah, that's pretty much radiation poisoning, I think, across the board. The bones just disintegrate within your body. You just turn to jelly.
Organs were liquefying and stuff like that. It was a horrendous way to go.
Just horrific. That's what, like I said, it's, at the beginning, it's a bit of a sad story, this.
Yeah.
So for a long time, this was just brushed off and nobody took it seriously. You know, you've got this big corporation, you know, multinational, maybe multinational corporation across a number of states, and their staff are dying. They're going, "No, it's nothing." In fact, they even said it was syphilis. So some people were dying, and they said, "Oh, it's just syphilis. These girls are just dying of syphilis."
Dear God.
Yeah, and you know, just nothing to do with us. And it wasn't until 1925 before it really became apparent that it was radium that was having an effect on these workers.
Right. You'd have to look at what's the common thing that they're all touching.
Well, yeah.
Sure.
But again, right, it's 1920s. These thoughts... Yeah, you say that now, of course, because that's what we do. But it's only because of things like this we do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If it wasn't for this, then that we wouldn't look at it like this. So it's kind of a new thing. Everyone's going, radium, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
Get it down, you have a radium drink, mint, brush your teeth with it. And then these people are dying. Well, it can't be radium because I feel great. Mm-hmm. My teeth are actually literally glowing. You know, so it's one of them, isn't it? Like, so there was a lady called Grace Fryer, and she was a dial painter, and she just flat out refused to remain silent. It was one of these, like, no, it's this. It's definitely this. Mm-hmm. And while her body was literally falling apart, like, she was riddled with cancer, she just fought tirelessly for justice. She took on the corporation. She just demanded accountability for this. She was convinced it's the radium. I'm telling you, get it sorted. So Grace and four of her colleagues, they looked to sue their employer, this United States Radium Corporation. But for 2 years, no one would take on the case. Because they were just, we haven't got a chance. It's five girls or five women against this huge corporation. There's no point. They'll just sweep us off the floor. And it wasn't until 1928, until an attorney called Leonard Grossman took on the case. And that's when the matter actually went to court.
Right.
Now, by this time, radium was on the decline because people started to realize the dangers of radiation poisoning. So it wasn't being used that much. So it might have been that it was kind of like, well, okay, well, they're their best days are behind us, so let's bring this forward. Now, what's pretty sickening about this is the United States Radium Corporation, throughout the sort of build-up to the case and whatnot, they did everything in their power to prevent it to progress.
Right.
Now, this is a second-hand source. I don't know. I've got a quote, so I don't know if this is true. But the rumor is that they decided to delay matters because they thought if they delay it enough, the five girls that are suing will just die. I know, it's absolutely so dark, isn't it? It's like, if we just delay and delay and delay, they'll be dead by the time it actually gets to court. And then fuck them, like, you know, it doesn't really matter. But it, you know, the powers that be disallowed this, and they managed to get it through court, and it was settled in 1920, at the end of 1928, and the five girls were rewarded with compensation. So it was only kind of, you know, it was only a fraction of what they initially demanded.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were looking for about £1 million each,
right?
So, which is huge money back in 1928.
Yeah, massive, isn't it?
But what they actually got was £10,000 in damages.
Mm-hmm.
This is dollars. So this is a USA case. It's $10,000 in damages, and $600 per year for the rest of their lives. And all their legal and medical bills were paid for by the company.
Right.
So I did an inflation adjustment mm-hmm. for the figures, just to see what it would have been like, what the figures would have been today. Bearing in mind, this is a death sentence. These five women are curtains, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's like £600 a year till you die, but, you know, but that's two payments or something. So the $10,000 in 1928 money would be $182,650 in today's money. So it's not a lot. It's not a lot, really.
Not enough to buy a half decent house, is it?
No, not really, no. And then the $600 per year, that's just under $11,000.
Right.
Per year. So.
So again, it's not even a wage, is it?
It's really? Nothing, is it? It's like, no. Considering what, because like I said, it's a death sentence for them. Mm-hmm. And they've just been given a sweetener, really, isn't it? It's just go away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we don't need to deal with you. So that's pretty disappointing. But the good news is that the case kind of had a snowballing effect. So lots of women. So you've got to remember as well, it's not just this company, this United States Radium Corp, that were doing this. There was a number of other companies who all had these factories where they had women in painting dials and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the case itself had a snowballing effect, and many other cases followed. You know, women suing all these companies and the industry and things like that. Now, many women were successful. Some weren't. Some died before they could even get their case heard. But then others would win and go on to live long lives, albeit battling cancer sort of every step of the way.
Yeah.
And as I said before, collectively, these were all known as the Radium Girls.
Wow.
So the positives, I suppose, is that their landmark legal battles were the very first in which an employer was deemed responsible for the health and safety of the workers. And it led to sweeping changes throughout the workplace, you know, in safety and regulation and things like that. And it paved the way for future generations of improvements in workers' rights. So I know this is in America, I know this is in the USA, but I still feel as though, you know, you've got policymakers in this country who look over the seas and go, that's a good idea. I think we should have that here. So I do think this is sort of more of a global thing than just isolated to the USA.
Mm-hmm.
So because of these women bringing this action against these companies, that's the reason why, you know, potentially we have workers' rights today. Now, I know you're a business owner, Fraser, so you're probably you probably hate all this sort of safety regulations and workers' rights. But
I do, yeah. I think they suck, yeah.
But, you know, as an employee myself, I think they're buzzing.
Well, do you know, I think you must know this. My great-great-grandfather set up the first ever workers' union.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he was responsible for getting children out of the mines and fair pay for miners and stuff like that. And set up, save the children. So it's, you know, that is in my family from many years ago, and I've read a lot of the history and the way that workers were treated. It was kind of, if you want a job and you want some money, then you have to do this really dangerous thing. If you get hurt, fucking tough.
That's it. Second-rate citizens. You've got the business owners, the landowners, mm-hmm. and then the workers underneath that.
The business owner, their attitude was, I'm paying you to take this risk.
Yeah.
I'm paying you to go down the coal mine. If it collapses in or you get gassed or you get blown up, then that's just tough shit because I'm paying you to do it. So it's up to you to take the risk. If you need the money to put food on the table, off you go, down the fucking mine. There's your pick.
Yeah, and, you know, obviously that's wrong.
Yeah, same with these radium girls.
It's... Exactly, yeah. It's just the big corporation going. And in fact, I did read, I think maybe I'll put it in later, but I'll just mention it now. So towards the end of the United States Radium Corporation, like they eventually sort of closed down, I think, or maybe they got incorporated into something else. And the sort of scientists and things that were working in the factories like had full-on hazmat suits on walking around. And like so yeah, that's right. So this case sort of like came to be and pass, and then they introduced these sort of working regulations. So they'd give the women sort of like tabards and maybe a face mask or something.
Yeah.
And then all the scientists are walking around in these Hamas suits, and they've been doing it for years. And they're going, no, it's fine. Just lick the tip of the paintbrush. You're all right. And they're sat there going, why are you wearing that?
There's a bit in, for our American listeners, go and watch Only Fools and Horses. There's a bit in that where Del Boy gets his allotment, and there's some big containers of toxic waste in this allotment that someone's dumped there, and he's got to get it moved. So he gets two of his pals to come down and give him a hand, and he tells them it's perfectly safe. It's fine. It's perfectly safe. So they go and start moving it, and then he turns up in a full deep sea diver suit with a helmet on and everything.
Yeah, similar thing. Yeah.
Going, yeah, it's fine. Just crack on with it. Why are you wearing that?
We'll come to the end of this tragic story, I suppose. You know, it's great, as I mentioned, the Radium Girls and the cases that were brought paved the way for these workers' rights and safety regulations. But not only this, because many of the women allowed scientists to study them and the impact of radiation on the human body. It's actually thought that if it wasn't for these tests and these studies, there would have been far less precautions used later in time when the USA were studying nuclear weapons.
Right.
So, for example, in the Manhattan Project, they reckon that if it wasn't for the studies on the radiation that was done with the Radium Girls, there would be far less precaution. There would be far more widespread radiation on the people that worked on that project. And these Radium Girls potentially saved thousands of lives because of that. So, like, if you watch, like, that Oppenheim film that was out last year.
I tried to watch it twice.
It is hard work. But when it actually gets to the point of, like, setting off the bomb or whatever,
yeah,
you know, they're literally sort of miles away from it. They're all behind, like, these big screens with big kind of, like, you know, plastic clothes on and, you know, big sheets. And what the point is that if there wasn't this study on the Radium Girls, when that blast went off, none of that would have been there.
Yeah,
they would have all just been like infected, hit with radiation, you know. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, so that, not another thing that's come from these fantastic women, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's a sad story in one respect, you know, and I suppose today, like, the legacy of the Radium Girls lives on as a reminder of the human cost of corporate greed, like you were saying before. Mm-hmm. You know, if the corporation wants it, you do it or you lose your job. You know, and they're sat there going, well, I don't want to lose my job because it's good.
Yeah.
But I think on the other side of things, there's certainly some positives to be drawn from it.
Yeah.
Particularly in the power of ordinary people enacting to positive change, I suppose. You know, if she stood up for what she believed in and fought, and I think people can do that if they want, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it be social change and changes in employment or what have you. It just shows that people do actually have some sort of power. somewhere.
Definitely.
So that's the story of the Radium Girls. I think we should all give them a big shout out.
Definitely, definitely. Wonderful people. Because, like you said, it's, you know, people need to stand up for themselves. And, you know, you made the joke, I'm a business owner and I'm one of the guys that doesn't give a fuck. But, you know, at the end of the day, businesses, there are dangerous jobs. And I think, you know, it's not a case of saying, well, you can't do a job if it's dangerous. But I think the company has to do everything in their power to make it as safe as is possible for the employees.
Now they do, yeah.
Yeah, and there's...
Because of this. Well, like I say, it's a USA thing. So, but
like you said, it's a snowball effect.
Yeah, yeah. And there was cases here as well. Like the asbestos thing was a thing here, wasn't it? If you remember.
Yeah.
And there's still cases today where people have contracted, is that the right word? Or developed cancer because they've been exposed to asbestos because years ago they were knocking down a building which had asbestos in it and stuff. So definitely. It's kind of a similar thing, you know. There is, in my view, a responsibility of an employer to ensure that their employees are safe and working in a safe environment. And that just simply didn't happen here.
Yeah. Although I think sometimes it does go too far. We had a sky engineer come to do something to our sky dish. And he took a ladder round to the back of the house and he drilled a hole in the house and screwed his ladder to the side of my house. Screw, hole, roll plug, everything. He then put a helmet on. He put a harness on. He put knee and elbow pads on, right?
Yeah.
Threw a rope over the top of the ladder, pulled it down, tied it to his harness, climbed up two rungs of the ladder, moved a wire, climbed back down, took it all back off again.
Yeah, I mean, that's very extreme. But
it would have fallen 2 foot.
But that is very extreme. But if you didn't do all that and he fell, who's he going to sue?
Nothing would have happened to him.
It doesn't matter. He'd still, he would have gone, I'm suing my employer because they didn't make me safe in my job. So yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe there's it's a bit of a balancing act. But I don't think you can say that on this. Fucking hell, we're talking about women who got fucking radium poisoning. It's a bit different, like, you know.
It is. I'm just saying that I think, you know, I think the problem is in these things, this always happens, that people fight for rights and then they get rights and then they try and they just take it too far. But yeah, I'm all for workers' rights.
Wow. I didn't realize you were such a fascist, man.
I think they take the piss sometimes.
Yeah, two people got too many rights. I agree. They have.
But. You know, that's not, you know, it is an employer's responsibility to make sure the employees are safe. Absolutely, I'm for that. But I think it's
got a Tory. What a Tory.
It's got ridiculous.
Right. Well, on that note, I'm going to call it a night. I'm angry at you, Tory boy.
Do you know, another thing that I got, remember I was saying about getting angry?
Oh, yeah.
Something that pisses me off. I've got a cat, a Maine Coon, a big,
pardon?
A Maine Coon, my big cat, big beast, twice the size of a normal cat. And
it's lovely.
We live in an estate that's it's just its own estate, and it's got one of those Facebook pages where everyone messages, oh, do you want this? I'm throwing it away and stuff like that. And I'm fed up with people putting pictures of my cat on Facebook going, oh, this big cat was in my garden. Whose was it? And all this. Because at the end of the day, he's quite a stealable cat. And, I want is my cat's constantly getting advertised on Facebook. And
catnapped.
We keep saying to people on the app, just that's our cat. He's fine. Don't take pictures of him. Put him on Facebook. But everyone's like, they're all trying to do good. Is this someone's cat? Is it lost? It's not lost. It's just trying to kill a pigeon in your garden. Just leave him.
Go for a shit in your garden. Just leave him alone.
I know. Don't want him shitting here. So
they never shit in their own garden, though. That's
the thing. No. That made me angry. But no, that was dead interesting. Actually, I'll be honest. I've seen the headline about these the Radium Girls.
I think there is a film, I think, which I came across, like a 2008 film. I've not seen it. I just came across it in passing whilst I was researching.
I knew of the story, but I didn't know the story, and I'm glad you've told it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for listening, and thank everybody out there for listening.
Aye, it's that horrible point where I need to come up with one for next week now.
That's it. I've got one. put our feet up next week. Right. Again, thank you very much, Fraser. Fraser the Tory boy.
Definitely not a Tory. Definitely not.
He hates workers' rights. Yeah. All right. That's been the Most Dangerous Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Thanks, James. Goodbye, everyone.